Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. I have over 100 shows there since I've been doing the show for 2 years now. Last week, I interviewed Gregory von Hausch, the president and CEO of the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival. And that festival is starting very soon. It begins next week, November 7th, and it runs through November 23rd. And as always, there's lots of exciting things going on. The film festival opens with a movie called Lucky Stiff, and the lead of that film, Jason Alexander, will be here, along with the person who plays his wife, played by Pamela Shaw, and they will both be here in Fort Lauderdale at the Amatoro Theater at the Broward Center on November 7th for the opening night film. And there will be a party afterward at what used to be Off the Hookah and is now called Sin. There will be a party. Of course, there's parties and events throughout the festival and films from around the world. I think there's over 175 films, I want to say, at the festival this year. And the centerpiece film is Frank vs. God, directed by Stuart Schill. And I am actually featuring Stuart in my upcoming magazine, Independent Streak Magazine. I had a chance to interview him. But his film, Frank vs. God, is pretty funny, about a man whose life kind of falls apart and he ends up suing God. So you want to check out that festival. There's all kinds of great things happening. But today I'm interviewing producer and actor Jacques de Rosina, and I believe I have him on the line. Okay, Jacques, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, thank you for coming on the show again today. You've been on before, and now you're back.
Yes, I am. I'm back.
Well, you've been pretty busy, and one of the latest projects that you've been working on is a Hunger Games TV show. Tell us a little bit about that project.
Well, Hunger Games Mockingjay is coming out November 21st, and basically Google, Lionsgate, and YouTube created a 5-episode series called The District Voices, and District Voices are basically they're District Voices from the town of Panem that the entire series is based on, and these are basically characters from the film franchise that help all the district people in terms of this is where they're recruited from, and they represent different districts. There's about 13 different districts, and I'm one of the district voices that's fighting and showing different tactics to Katniss and to everyone that's being recruited and as tribute. So in our district, we represent masonry, and we represent different tactics as far as what you should prepare once you join the games.
And did you have to do a lot of fight choreography, learn all the moves, or did you kind of do some of it yourself, or how did that work?
Well, yeah, I had to learn some fight choreography on set on the day of the shoot. And it was pretty interesting because it felt like a little bit like American Ninja Warrior, because we had to do everything. I mean, literally, you know, climb the ropes, do all kinds of activities on the mat. And one of the toughest things was because it's a shoot, so you're not just shooting just one take. You're doing multiple takes. So imagine having to do this for 12 hours, and I was being flipped 15 times in
wow.
the air. And yeah, and even when between lunchtime, I'm trying not to eat too much because I know that I'm about to fight again and being thrown in the air. So I'm trying to, like, counter my food so that I can still be able to be active while I'm doing this.
Wow. So it's pretty painful afterward?
yeah. It is definitely trying. I mean, in the moment, you just have adrenaline running, so you're like, let's do this. But then once everything stops, I felt every pain possible. Even when I was being flipped, every single time I would land differently so that the pain would shift towards a different part of my body.
Oh, my gosh. Now, have you done anything like this before? Like fighting like that?
I've done some other things like that in the past because I do capoeira, which is the Brazilian martial arts. So I've done some other things like that and some other projects before. So, but this was to the extreme, I would say, because they wanted real fighting. So we had to really hit each other. I mean, I got hit a couple times in the face. And and the legs. I mean, there was real pain, but I mean, it was real.
Wow. Now you're in pretty good shape, so you must, you know, kind of be sort of ready for something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I exercise and I do practice all the time. But when you're in a sparring session, you typically have breaks in between. But since when you're shooting and things are happening so rapidly, it's not a normal situation where you would have time for breaks and stuff like that, where you have to sustain the energy level. That's another thing too, is between each take, it's like you can put all this energy in one take and then all of a sudden you have to sustain the same amount of energy every single time. And that can be a lot. It can be very challenging because you're kind of like, well, let me get a break here because I don't think I can quite do what I just did on the last take and give you. You'll see a drop, but you know you gotta sustain it.
Wow. Now, how did you find out about this?
I was contacted through a casting director, and when I didn't even know until when I got on set and I was like, oh, wow. I didn't even know this was what this was for because it was.
Wow.
Yeah, it was under a non-disclosure agreement and stuff.
It was kind of hush-hush.
So, yeah, it was very hush-hush until I got there and I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it must be really great to be part of a franchise like that because it's so popular.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing because I remember watching the other the two films before that, and I just imagine, I mean, just going through that and just fell, you know, became a fan, but just always imagine, like, how would it be to actually be in it and stuff? I mean, even as you're watching you're rooting for the Katniss and for all the main characters and for people. And you're just imagining this. And then to get the call one day to actually be in it, I mean, it's surreal, you know? I mean, I didn't expect to be in the Hunger Games, this to be a part of this thing. So it's amazing.
Now, where was it shot?
We shot in Los Angeles. I mean, they've been shooting all over Atlanta in different parts of the country. But our series, we shot it in Los Angeles.
Hmm. Now, is it done? Is it all the 5 episodes already complete?
Yeah, it's complete. Actually, it's on air. The 5 episodes are on air, and it's part of a promotion for the film. As far as getting as if there weren't a lot of fans before, but there are way more fans even now as the anticipation is happening for the film to come out. I mean, the ticket sales just actually went out on October 29th, pre-sales for the film release. So it's getting a lot of buzz in anticipation until the film comes out.
Yeah. I love The Hunger Games. So where is it being aired? Is it online? Is it on TV?
Yeah,
where do people see it?
It's being aired online. Actually, on the Hunger Games website has a link to it. They have a special dedicated website they made for Capital TV. I don't know if you know about some of the intricacies of Hunger Games. Capital TV is like the basically it's their own station within the Hunger Games. It's been seen throughout the entire film where President Snow gives his address and these are all the news for Panem. So and Capital TV. This is where you would see all the episodes, like all the 5 episodes in about District Voices. And it's, as they say, as all the District Voices and Capital and President Snow says, it's mandatory to watch these videos. So
that's right. Yeah, I noticed it's on YouTube, and I'm sure it's all over. If people just Google it.
Google it, and you can just put like a District Hunger Games District Voices series. You can Google it or put it on YouTube, and it'll pop up.
Okay. Now, you also worked on a PBS documentary recently, a completely different topic, a historical documentary. Tell me a little bit about how you found out about that one, and it must have been a very different experience to portray somebody real.
Yeah, this was a reenactment documentary of a first, basically it was a civil rights reenactment situation that happened about 75 years ago in Alexandria, Virginia at a library. And basically there were 5 African-American teenagers that were told they weren't allowed to read books at the library. And so they sat down and did a sit down protest. And this actually happened before the Rosa Parks situation and a lot of other situations where
1939,
exactly. August 21st, 1939. And time where, I mean, something as simple as just going to a library was prohibited. And they just wanted, it was a very peaceful protest, no violence. They just went to the shelf, picked up a book, and just sat down and read books, and they were arrested for that. And it was all over the newspapers. And so I portrayed one of the 5 men that played. I was Edward Gaddis. That was one of the African-American men that I played.
Had you ever heard about this piece of history before?
No, I actually didn't. I was contacted about it, I started researching more, and to be physically at the library to reshoot it was interesting because now things are different. But it was just we matched when we saw all the clippings, the photographs, and to match the character descriptions and costumes, and just reading more about it, you were just like in awe of how they must have felt in an era where things were in that situation, where now things are different. But yeah, it was definitely a history.
Now, has that already been shown on PBS, or is it still going to be shown later on? Or?
Yeah, it has been shown on PBS, and what I've been telling people to do is actually they can ask their local library to request a copy of it anywhere in the country, all over the world.
Out of obscurity, right?
Out of obscurity. Okay. That's what it's called. Your local library, you can ask them. They can get a copy of it and for you to actually look at it and get some more information about it.
Yeah, you've been really busy. You also did a skateboarding film. It was a kind of a redo of The Devil's Toy Redux. And tell me about your character in that one.
Yes. Well, this is just like you said, it's a remake of a French film. Actually, it was done in Canada by a French filmmaker, and it was about the skateboarding industry at the time where skateboarding was considered something that you should do. I mean, it was fairly new, especially in Canada. So in this film, myself and 2 other French characters played these filmmakers that are researching what was this filmmaker like, and what was it like during that time when skateboarding was happening. And so we end up going to different characters and finding out what were some of their thoughts and about the director, and some of their thoughts about what was happening to them at the time and what their parents told him not to do as far as skateboarding, and we go on this journey, but it kind of, not to give it away, but it kind of turns into a twist at the end, where it's, mm-hmm. because it was shot in a 1950s type of camera, or I don't want to say 19, very old camera. It's not, when you see the footage, I don't want to say 1950s, I mean 1980s, like it's okay. very, well, it's definitely the type of camera that was used, you would definitely see from the footage that this is not, it's not digital, it's not clear, it looks like definitely
like
something
Super 8?
From the past. Yeah, I mean, it's well, even beyond that, actually, because even processing the footage was a bit of a challenge, I was told, from the director, because it's so, because of the way it was shot, it's not like something digital where you can just, you know, you just have tapes or things that you can just easily edit. It was very specific, and not that many people know from the past how to do this.
Why would they do that?
What was that? I'm sorry.
Why did they choose to do that?
Well, they chose it specifically to for the concept of the film, because part of our character's process was that this was shot several years ago, that even though we're in present time today, like, this is found footage. So basically what you're watching, this film is kind of like found footage style of these three filmmakers from the past that were actually, so that's why it looks very realistic in a sense. I would say kind of like a Blair Witch or a Paranormal Activity. Yeah, so it was shot in that style where you would think that this is actually happening, where in a sense, I mean, it was actually happening because we actually went there and it was the camera and everything was, we were giving an outline, but it was entirely improvised. All of our lines and our scenes were improvised in the moment. So
you must be pretty good with that, with improv.
Yeah. It's
not always so easy.
It's great to do that too, because it's like it brings out a lot of your thoughts and a lot of your childhood memories and how you grew up. As far as like, can you come up quick things on your feet, and it's a great concept of when you're incorporating acting. And certain, it doesn't work for everything. I mean, you do need some kind, as long as you have an outline of something, because you can go off on a tangent, but as long as you have an outline or direction of where to go and what's your objective in the scene, then it works.
And your character is French. Now, are you French? Because are you from France? Because your name is Jacques.
Well, I am a combination of a lot of things. I'm Haitian Dominican. But my grandmother was Italian, if you can believe it. My grandmother was...
Well, that's De Rosina.
Right? Well, it's from... That's our Dominican last name, but grandmother was Sicilian, actually. Sicilian-Italian. Their last name is Asensio. But it's just... It's, I want to say, evolution. I mean, our family, we do look like we are United Nations, so.
So do you speak French?
So I speak French, yes. My first language was French.
Okay.
I actually learned, my sister and I, we learned English watching television. That's how we actually learned English.
Wow. It seems like you travel all over the place to either be in a film or to go to the Cannes Film Festival, and you're all over. Is there any place that you wouldn't go to go make a movie, or do you really travel everywhere?
I mean, I love traveling, period, and to work there is a bonus. I mean, it's amazing to get to do that. I just love seeing different parts of the world and different cultures. And I mean, literally, I on any given day, I'm always thinking, like, where else can I go? I mean, it's such a big world out there. And every time you end up traveling, you end up learning and seeing new things. And I'm just excited about that. And to be able to work there, too, is like, that's amazing to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So I welcome it.
From your experience, do you think it's easier to make films in the U.S. or abroad?
Well, I guess I would say for me, I mean, your natural home base, because I'm based in Los Angeles, so it's a lot easier mm-hmm. to make films here. Once you're making films abroad, there are a lot of things that you have to deal with as far as visas and using a local production team to work there for you, and with permits and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of red tape, especially there are some countries that are not as liberal. That's the difference to as far as the United States. Well, it's true, because before you can even shoot in their country, they have to know what is the concept of the project that you're doing. Is mm-hmm. it going to put them in a bad light? You know,
right.
And that's understandable. I mean, you don't want to go into someone's home and just start bashing them. So
mm-hmm.
so there's
well,
a lot
your,
that you have to
go ahead.
You have to deal with. What was that? What were you going to say?
Last time you were on the show, we talked about Cannes. Mm-hmm. Also, have you been into the American film market, which is coming up in a few days?
Actually, we are preparing for that, actually.
Okay.
I spent and I'm still spending a big time these last couple nights preparing all of our information for all the meetings that we have prepared for the American film market with sales reps and distributors. We have about 6 different film projects that we are preparing for. So it's a lot of work to get a lot of details correct and to be able to answer as many questions as possible that we anticipate that they will have for us.
What type of paperwork do you usually put together for those types of films that you're looking to get distribution for?
Well, you're looking for everything from key art, which is a movie poster, to
mm-hmm.
a lot of stuff, because it depends on what stage of your film that you're in, whether you're in pre-production, development, or in post. A lot of times, the film market, there's a lot of sales agents, international and domestic, that are looking for completed films. So if your film's already
right.
done, you're just looking for a sales rep or a distributor. Where if you're in other stages where your film is still in development, where at this point you're looking for all the pieces together to put together. So in order for you to attract sales reps that will be interested and financiers, because, I mean, you need money to make the movies, you need to have everything from your cast attachments or a letter of intent. So that's
mm-hmm.
a situation of dealing with casting directors, if you have a casting director on board to try to get you the best possible talent for your project, and your crew and your director, and director bio and crew bio, and getting all and comparables, film comparables too, which is important, because
right.
it's just like it's a brand. So every film that you do is it's a brand in itself, and you have to show how well that it will do in the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for those that don't know about comparables, can you talk a little bit more about what that means?
Well, comparables are basically for a film. You have to, if you're making a film, you have, and you're trying to sell it, or you're trying to put it out to different distributors or sales reps so that it can go out to the theaters or DVD or whatever type of distribution, and you need this film to be made, and you need money. You have to compare it to films that were distributed or released in the past in a similar mm-hmm. genre, and show the revenue potential behind it, and the artistic potential and the potential of an audience being behind it, so that people can see that this is valuable.
Mm-hmm, it's viable. And also the target audience too, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah. It's basically a whole business package that you put together. And then how do you go about setting up meetings with people? Do you just kind of walk around and look for them? Do you have to set them up ahead of time? How does that work?
Well, yes. Well, you have to join if you have to register the American Film Market, because basically the American Film Market is like the Cannes Film Market. The Cannes Film Festival is also a market, and so is the Berlin mm-hmm. Film Festival. So there's about 4 big markets all over the world. And basically, mm-hmm. everyone just travels to different parts of the world for these markets. And some of the biggest films in the entire world, before they are released, they're there. Like, for instance, since we were talking about Hunger Games, mm-hmm. at the Cannes Film Festival, the Hunger Games was there. So there was a big advertising displays all over France and dedicated buildings and ad space and special exhibition screenings. So these are all the things that are being done at a market to show interest to different parts of the world. So they're interested in purchasing your film. So your film, when it comes out, besides the United States is considered domestic, but anything outside mm-hmm. of the U.S., it's international, so you have anywhere from Canada to France, Germany, Italy. These are all separate territories that have to be negotiated separately outside of the mm-hmm. U.S. and in different formats. We're talking DVD, streaming, video on demand, and theatrical release, whether it's a limited theatrical release or if it's a worldwide release.
Mm-hmm. And you just had 2 of your films, Murder 101 and Meth Head, are now out on DVD, VOD on Amazon and iTunes. Did you get distribution for them through a market like this, or how did you go about getting that?
Yes, well, we went through several markets. We were in Cannes. We went through many festivals. We actually, for Meth Head, we won 12 awards. And
wow.
That was amazing. And for basically, we did have a sales representative for each one of the films because they're both different genres. Mm-hmm. One is a dark drama, the other one's a thriller. So we did have different, we actually had limited theatrical release, one in Los Angeles at the Lemley Theater.
Uh-huh.
For both of them, actually.
Great.
But now they're out on DVD. They're out on video on demand and on Vimeo and special release and internationally and in Amazon and iTunes. And even for Meth Head, we had Kurt Smith. I don't know if you know the singer Kurt Smith.
Sounds fine. Why do I know that?
He did the song from back in the day, Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Oh, okay, of course.
Yeah. Well, he worked on the soundtrack for us for that. It's actually,
oh,
the soundtrack for Meth Head is actually available on iTunes and on Amazon. So some of those Kurt Smith fans out there, you can get a soundtrack for Meth Head.
Now, what about Hulu or Netflix? What is the process for getting on that, and is that something that you would eventually do?
Yes, that's on the next agenda as far as that will probably be done within the next 6 months. Before it gets onto Hulu or Netflix, because these streaming services, they tend to be a little bit more exclusive as far as when your project is on their service. So it depends on your filmmaker strategy as far as what are your intentions as far as your strategy. Do you want to go streaming first or exclusively? Or so with us, because we did the limited theatrical release and we've done with the iTunes and all these other platforms and eventually to get into Netflix. As in Netflix, in a sense, it's not really the same as it was before, because Netflix has become more, they've been acquiring more TV shows. I don't know if you noticed a difference from before. I mean, everyone used to subscribe to Netflix to watch films, where now it's becoming, and it's, I see that the, it's probably turning towards a, becoming a network. I want to say, like, kind of like a TV network, because they're just, they're creating a lot of their own content now, as opposed to before, where they were just acquiring films. So.
Yeah. Now, I would guess that doing the DVD route, like what you're doing now, is more profitable than Hulu or Netflix. Is that right? Or how does it work as far as money when it, when you sell to Hulu or Netflix?
Well, when you do sell to Hulu or Netflix, there are flat, they do pay you a flat rate, because that's not their their most, at the moment, because they're, they've shifted, because they're acquiring more higher rated TV shows, or they created their own content from like Orange is New Black or House of Cards, where it's a give and take, because if you're on Netflix, you're, you know that there's a guaranteed, they have already millions of subscribers that are already subscribed to their program. Whereas when you're doing the DVD route, or you're self-distributing, there's a lot at stake. I mean, on one end, yes, you can make a higher profit, but at the other end, it's a lot of work on your end, because you have to do all the marketing. And you have to have capital behind that, and a lot of resources to get awareness for people to know that your project is available to be seen and to be sold. And so it's a lot of work and a lot of help when you're doing it self-distributing.
So it sounds like a difference between trying to get a little bit of profit or trying to be seen by more people is kind of the difference.
Yeah, it is. It's a... It is actually, yeah, it is like that. I mean, in some instances, people do make, they do make a big profit. It's not common, because I mean, it's you have to treat it like any form of distribution is, it's you have to treat it as if it's like a limited or a theatrical release, where once there's a release, meaning that the film is out to be in theaters, whether it's on DVD or theaters or video on demand or streaming, you still need advertising. You still need marketing. And it's just your budget may not be as big as it being in the theaters, because in the theaters, I mean, if you notice any films from like Hunger Games or projects such as Nightcrawler that just came out with Jake Gyllenhaal, like you'd see trailers on TV, or you'd see movie posters and advertising press releases and all that, it costs. I mean, production companies and studios, they have a budget in place for that. And if they feel that this project is really, really special, they'll raise their budget so that more advertising comes out. So if you're doing it yourself, you have to have your budget in place. And there's only so much that you can do as an independent production company to try to get that out in all these outlets. Especially when you're competing with bigger studios who have a bigger budget.
Right. Now, how do people find out more about your projects and about you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, for my production company, all of my projects, it's triangleroadent.com or on IMDb, either one.
Okay. And I know you're going off to a booking today, I believe. You were booked in something. What are you doing today?
Today, I am working on a photo shoot, actually.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is it for, are you modeling, or are you taking
pictures? No, I'm modeling it, actually. That's always interesting because I'm on both sides of the
right.
Of
you
the
do everything.
Industry.
So.
But nowadays, more and more people are doing that. You're not finding it people to just be. You're just an actor, or just a producer, or just a writer. It's kind of like it's become an overall surface where wherever you can use your talents, you want to use them and mm-hmm. just learn and research more so that you become more knowledgeable in each category.
I think you become more valuable too the more that you know.
Oh, absolutely. You do.
Yeah.
I mean, you're also able to bring a lot more to whatever it is you're hired to because you don't just have that concept of just like, oh, I was just hired as an actor. This is all I need. You actually
right.
understand a lot more of what's happening and you can bring a lot more to the table, as you said.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we went through a lot of stuff today and I know we're running out of time slowly but surely, but is there any last thing that you want to tell people that you're, you know, that's coming up or anything else that you want to say before we go?
Well, I mean, outside of my film projects, being on DVD, Murder 101, you can catch it.
Tom Sizemore.
With Tom Sizemore. Actually, both of our films are with Tom Sizemore.
Oh, that's right. Tom's in both of them.
He's in both of them. Murder 101.
He's everywhere.
And he's everywhere. Exactly. Murder 101. The other one's called Method. We're working on another. There's a big project right now that we're working on called Transformation Awaits. And it's based on an award-winning short film by a great director named Rachel Goldberg. And the film was called Neighbors. And it actually stars one of the guys from X-Men and Twilight, Eddie Gattegi.
Okay.
He's a star of it. And it's won a lot of awards in the film festival circuit as a short film. And we're making a full feature film out of it. So right now we're actually going to the film market with it, with all the great team that we have to get this film out there and all the other projects that we're doing. So
you're going to be looking for funding?
Yeah, looking for funding for sales reps and distributors for our project.
Great. So you have a lot of things to do at AFM.
Yes, I do.
Okay, well, break a leg with that, and I'm sure that you're going to have more projects soon that will bring you back on, and we'll talk about those too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And I just want to say to everyone, just whatever it is your dream is, to keep dreaming, but make it a reality. Never give up.
All right. There we go. All right. Thanks, Jacques. Merci beaucoup. And I will talk to you soon. Thanks so
Great.
Much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, that was a great conversation with Jacques de Rosina. And check out his website. And if you are in the Los Angeles area or if you're anywhere, you can always go to the AFM that we mentioned, which is happening in Santa Monica next week. It starts November 5th, I believe. Gosh, that's in 3 days. Okay, 3 days from now it starts. And it's definitely a place to go. And I personally have never gone, and I don't know why, but I have never gone to AFM. So someday I will go there myself. But I guess I've never had any projects that I wanted to pitch specifically. But if you are looking for distribution or a sales rep or financing, it's definitely the place to go. And it's in Santa Monica, like I said, so check that out. And I will be mentioning that in my magazine that's coming out, of course. I am working on finishing, hopefully today, my magazine that you can check out at Independent Streak, STREAK, magazine.com. It'll be out in the next few days. And all of the magazines are listed there, so you can go back and read what you haven't had a chance to read. I began the magazine in May, so I have issues from every month since then. And I have interviews with filmmakers. This issue I have an interview with Stuart Schill, who I mentioned earlier, from Frank vs. God. And I have an interview with Clara Mamet, the daughter of screenwriter David Mamet and actress Rebecca Pidgeon, who is doing her own film, The Two-Bit Waltz, which is going to be showing at the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, and she will be getting a Star on the Horizon Award. So I had a chance to talk to her. I can't wait to meet her and Stuart both at the film festival, which I mentioned starts November 7th and runs through November 23rd. If you want to find out more about the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, you can visit www.fliff.com, and you can also go back and listen to last week's episode where I interviewed Greg, the CEO and president of Fliff. Let's see what else. Also, please like my Facebook page. My Facebook page is just like this show, Indie Streak, okay? And I do put information occasionally. I don't bombard people, but I do put some stuff about the show. I put things about upcoming castings sometimes, stuff like that. And if you have information you want me to promote, you can always contact me. My email address is ravenprods@yahoo.com, ravenprods@yahoo.com, like Raven Productions. And I would be happy to look at whatever you have if you'd like to come on this show. I am pretty booked right now. I have a ton of people that want to come on right now, but send it to me. Or if you'd like to be in the magazine or whatever, you know, just email me and let me know. Or if you want me to be in your project, you know, I am slowly but surely getting back into acting myself. I've kind of taken a hiatus, but I am, again, interested in possible projects. I'm very excited. I'm going to be playing a reporter in Ram Hernandez's Prowler, and we're supposed to shoot that hopefully at the end of the month. And I also read a script for, so I don't know if I can mention it yet, but another project that I may be in. And so, yeah, I think I'll be doing some more acting very soon. So I'm sure I'll be telling you more about that as well on the show. But I try to make it not so much about me. It's about everybody else. But anyway, guys, thank you for tuning in today. And I will be back actually – next week I will not be here because next week I am taking a cruise as part of the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival. Then the 9th I'm not going to be here, but I'll be back on the 16th with someone new. So I will talk to you then. And in the meantime, you can go back and listen to the archives. Thank you so much, guys, and I will talk to you then. All right, bye-bye.